We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey there, thanks for checking out Behind the Badgers podcast. Today is April 2nd, 2020. I'm Patrick Herb, Brian Mason is with me. We are in our third week of social distancing podcasting. It's more comfortable for Brian and I to be separated by miles instead of sharing a table. We don't have to deal with each other as much. I think the whole dynamic has improved. What has not improved my coffee intake is out of control right now, is like working from home all the time, that I drink way more coffee than I have. So like, I feel like I'm shaking right now a little bit. That's one of the things that I have noticed about social distancing.
Yeah. I think having access to my coffee maker 24 hours a day is probably not the best thing for me. I've always been a pretty heavy coffee drinker, but extending it into the afternoon is probably not a great outcome out of all this.
My wife and I are forcing each other to drink water, like lots of water. And I think that what it's doing is there's like, I'm wearing out the carpet between my home office and the bathroom, but that's more than people want to know. How's isolation going for the Mason family?
It's going well. You know this, your wife is a teacher and an award-winning teacher at that. As if I didn't already have enough of an appreciation for the educators in our country, trying to balance working from home and being this halfway substitute kindergarten teacher for the last couple of weeks has opened my eyes to just everything that teachers go through. So I've definitely gained some perspective that way, and trying to figure out how to keep a stir-crazy five-year-old entertained and educated has been interesting. But other than that, yeah, we're holding up pretty well. How about you guys?
We're pretty much wearing out all of the challenges that you can find, like chalk art challenge and anything else that is out there, push-up challenge. And we're kind of running out. We need new challenges. I think we're about one day from joining TikTok. And once we get to TikTok, then it's pretty much all over. So other than that, we're doing fine. We're doing great. The intentional family time is a blessing in all of this.
It is a great benefit out of what is otherwise a really challenging time. And it's hard. I mean, be realistic. It's hard to act like anything is hard in our lives right now when you see what's going on in other parts of the country and what people are going through, either dealing with COVID-19 or the people that are on the front lines helping the people that are dealing with it and have a hard time complaining about our situation.
Right. We do a sports podcast. I mean, sports feels so trivial right now in a world climate that is so serious and is life and death in a lot of circumstances. So hopefully we can bring a little bit of entertainment and just bring a little bit of a just a distraction maybe from what is. So to that end, Brian, what's new in the news? There's not a lot in the sports world, but there are a couple things. I'll lead off with one. The NCAA Division I Council Coordination Committee, it's a mouthful, voted on Monday of this week to grant spring athletes an extra year of eligibility after this pandemic has shut down spring sports in college for 2020. That's an interesting decision. They're leaving it on the schools to self-apply waivers. So this does not apply to winter sports like basketball, but it does for spring. And what will be really interesting to see is how many schools, how they react to this. There's a lot of hurdles that this presents with roster size, incoming freshmen, the financial component of scholarships and roster size. So that'll be a really interesting thing to monitor here moving forward. What else is happening in the news?
Well, also on the NCAA front, some more changes to the recruiting calendar. That's something that's going to affect the Badgers a little bit. The dead period that the NCAA had enacted is now extended through the end of May. So what that effectively does is take away, in football terms, take away the spring evaluation period where coaches would normally be out on the road starting April 15th through the end of May and getting into schools and talking to the people that interact with the players they're recruiting on a regular basis. I mean, we had Saeed Khalif on the podcast back in February, and where we were talking about the impression that a guy like Joe Rudolph leaves on teachers and administrators and coaches at the high school level with how diligent the Wisconsin coaching staff is in really trying to get a good background and get to know these players. So that's something that now is off the table. You're not going to build, you couldn't get into those schools anyway, they're all closed, but that's a part of the recruiting calendar that now goes away. And what happens to that time, and is it made up? Or I don't think anybody has those answers yet. I think the next big question on the horizon is the period for official visits, the first 3 weeks of June, and what happens to those, because we know those are very important touch points for Wisconsin football in terms of recruiting, to be able to get recruits into Madison and get to know our other players and staff and see what Madison's all about.
And camps, how it affects,
definitely.
Wisconsin football recruits a lot from their camps. Wisconsin basketball does as well. The AAU period for basketball this summer is certainly in jeopardy, and what that's going to look like. And for a school like Wisconsin that maybe doesn't recruit off of rankings and stars and accolades as much as the right fit and the personality and finding the kids who – Paul Christ always says, finding the football players who chose football, not the ones that football chose them. Missing those touch points is that's what Wisconsin thrives in, identifying those kids. So that's concerning. If we're just talking again, talking to the sports realm here. NFL football is one of the only sports that's making headlines still, making news. Some Badgers are on the move, aren't they, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, the draft is pretty much the only sporting event that's going to continue, not as planned, because there won't be fans there. There's going to be no pomp and circumstance in Vegas like there would have been. But the NFL calendar is moving along, and with that was this opening of free agency. And so you've seen a lot of Wisconsin alums on the move. It was good to see Melvin Gordon land in a spot. He's in Denver. His backfield mate, the Badger backfield with the LA Chargers, is no more, because now Derek Watt is joining TJ in Pittsburgh as a free agent signing there, which I would have to think, if you're the Steelers, that's a pretty good incentive to try to get TJ Watt to stay past this initial contract that's going to end this year.
Sure.
I'm sure there's a couple reasons for that. A, Derek is a great player and has been a special teams ace for the Chargers and great fullback and all that, but the family connection certainly can't hurt in trying to keep a guy like TJ Watt in the fold. Joe Schobert had a big week.
Back to the Watts. Got a big kick out of JJ saying that now TJ is definitely going to have the upper hand on favorite uncle because he's going to have so much access to Derek's newborn baby. So JJ is very, very disturbed by that fact now. I think I got a kick out of that.
I did see a fair amount of people, the fans or people who follow the Steelers saying, okay, well, now the next logical move is let's get all three of them here and just bring JJ into the fold. So who knows? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's in the cards down the line. But Joe Schobert, like I said, he 5-year, $53 million contract in Jacksonville the same week he became a dad. So pretty big week for him. Rick Wagner, locally, now going to be a Packer after spending the last few seasons in Detroit. So he'll be back closer to home. And then Bo Allen goes to the Patriots. So some Badger faces in different places. And then another part of it was the retirement of Travis Frederick, which as a fan of Travis's personally is a loss. I mean, he's a guy who's going to do a lot of great things in his life, but not seeing him play at that Pro Bowl level anymore is a bummer.
Yeah, all you had to do was see some of the comments that came out of Cowboys officials and Cowboys teammates to understand the value that he had and what people thought of him. And you and I got to know him a little bit when he was here, you more than me, but you could see it. He's smart, engaging person, great football player, and he certainly left had an impact on Dallas. Other people having impacts is another newsworthy thing that I want to shed some light on here. And as I think about people making impacts right now in the community with the trying to help with the response to COVID-19, the famous quote from Mr. Rogers that circulates a lot, and what he said: when I was a boy, I would see scary things in the news, and my mother would always say to me, look for the helpers, you always find people who are helping. That seems to ring so true right now, that there are people all over the world that are sacrificing and being selfless and trying to do whatever they can to make an impact right now. And it's inspiring to see some of that locally happening with some of our, with in fact, two of the current UW, one football player and another one who's attached to the program.
Yeah, the Dunn brothers, Jack, who's going to be a senior wide receiver, and Bobby.
Unaffiliated to the coffee. Back to the coffee discussion.
Yes, not Dunn Brothers Coffee.
Let's be clear. Okay.
Which we could use one of those around here. Those are
I'm over my limit.
But yeah, the Dunn brothers, Jack, senior wide receiver, and then Bobby, his brother, who's a grad assistant on the coaching staff. Really cool initiative that they've launched in the last week to make sure I'm calling her the Team 2020 campaign. But what it boils down to is trying to raise their initial goal anyway, trying to raise $100,000 to fund meals for a Grace Hospice Care here in the Madison area and provide food for a population that really needs it during this time. I mean, you're talking about people that can't go to the grocery store, people that can't get out and go get food. So it's really cool to see them step up and try to find a way to fill that need. But then I guess I'd call them the usual suspects in terms of doing good out there, the people you're not surprised to see stepping up. J.J. Watt and his wife donating 1 million meals to the Houston Food Bank. Russell Wilson and Sierra had already pledged to donate 1 million meals to food banks in the Seattle area. And then this week you saw him sort of be one of the faces of a pretty cool initiative that Kenny Dichter, UW alum and
friend
CEO.
Friend of the pod, hopefully. Maybe not, but friend of the program.
Certainly friend of the program, yeah. As proud a Badger fan as you will find out there in Kenny. But he's the CEO of Wheels Up, the private aviation company.
And we need to get a Wheels Up sponsorship for this podcast. Now, that's okay. I'm starting to think here. That's what we're missing. Go ahead.
He does like to sponsor things. I mean, I remember, you know, watching when the Triple Crown was won, and who was the guy in the right in the winner's circle? But Kenny D, of course. Anyway, Wheels Up has about 8,000 members, and so Russell and Kenny have partnered on trying to find a way to help those 8,000 people do some good, and they're trying to – I want to make sure I get the number right. Cause yes, 10 million. They're trying to fund 10 million meals through Feeding America, which the even crazier number as I was looking this up, Feeding America distributed 4.2 billion meals last year in 2019, which is a crazy number. So good on them for trying to leverage the people they have access to and their platform to try to get some people to help and raise money to fund some meals for people who need them.
And good on them for coming up with the name Meals Up as a playoff of Wheels Up. That's as like the marketer inside me loves that. Like it's great. More locally too, it's inspiring to see efforts of some of the companies that are really getting behind helping out. You know, a couple of our great corporate partners that we work with all the time, Alliant Energy has donated huge sums of money to local food pantries and the American Red Cross, the United Way, even here in the Madison community. Bebo Harris is another one that's doing the same thing. They're investing substantially in Chicago, Milwaukee, and Madison COVID response and recovery teams. So we're grateful for that. I listened to an interesting podcast that Bebo Harris put out this week. Actually, their CEO, Daryl White, hosted an expert panel where they discussed a variety of topics, but social, financial, emotional impact of COVID-19, and they forecasted some things that the future might hold. They had WebMD's chief medical officer, John White, on there, among others, which was really interesting. And if people, it was an interesting thing to listen to. I would encourage people to check it out. Just search BMO COVID-19 Insights, whoever you listen to podcasts, and give it a listen because it was interesting. More interesting than that, though, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the one, you think about our partners too. I mean, we're fortunate to have partnerships with a lot of the grocery store chains in the state. And I can't think of anybody that is more on the front lines of this nationwide than the people that are literally working in the grocery stores. So I think it's worth giving a shout out to everyone that's making sure that we, when we do venture out of our houses to get food, can get that food. And I give some credit to those companies for stepping up to support their employees too, because they are truly in the front lines of all of this.
Yeah, my mother and father-in-law go to Hy-Vee when they have their hour for seniors and at-risk folks, where they've sanitized the entire store, and they are very those folks are very appreciative for their efforts, no doubt. Let's transition though. We had a great conversation with Lauren Carlini, the Badger volleyball superstar, who is on the U.S. national team. And she just came back from playing internationally in Russia. She is our second guest in a row that we've talked to in quarantine. But we had we talked about a ton of things with her, and we're very appreciative to have Lauren come by our podcast. Lauren, thanks for catching up with Wisconsin fans. You're a friendly face for a lot of Badger fans. Can you give us an update on what you're doing right now? Are you in quarantine?
Yeah, so I got back from Russia. It was almost going on 2 weeks now. I'm in quarantine until Saturday. So really just been hanging out and kind of taking the time to do things that I haven't had time to do since I was home in college for whatever it was, 3-4 weeks during winter break. So yeah, just kind of taking the time to reset my mind and body and just relaxing. It's actually been a really nice change of pace. So enjoying some coffee and taking the mornings nice and slow.
That's the sort of the blessing in this, is that it's forcing people to relax a little, I suppose, and maybe reconnect with intentional time. But so we talked to Ethan Happ on this podcast last week, and he was quarantining in the Chicago area as well, and mm-hmm. or Western Illinois, but his parents weren't there. They were at a hotel. Are you by yourself in your parents' home, or do you have family around you?
So I'm with my family around me. We kind of thought about the idea of me doing separate quarantine, but just figured it would be better if we were all in the same place. kind of just easier on everyone. I was also in Russia, where there wasn't as many issues as there was with Italy. So it was a little different situation than Ethan's, but just decided that being with my family and us all staying together would be the best choice.
Did you have to make any kind of dramatic escape? Was it like a fear that you wouldn't be able to get back in the country or anything like that? Or how was your trip home?
We want to hear like James Bond style stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. It was starting to heat up here in the United States, and I was watching the news. It was getting extremely stressful because we were going through playoffs at this point, and we finished quarterfinals, and it was starting to heat up pretty bad in the United States, and certain states started going into travel bans and shelter in places. And so I kind of slowly started packing up my stuff in Russia and just figuring out what would be the best option, and just honestly being ready if I had to leave on a moment's notice. So We played our first semifinal match, and right after that is when the level 4 travel advisory came into place for everywhere in the world. He just said, if you're overseas, return home, because we don't know if we're going to be able to get you back after this point. So that was on a Thursday, and we actually ended up traveling on Friday to the second semifinal match. We traveled to the semifinal match, landed, found out that the game was postponed, the other match was postponed, and then it was like 30 minutes later, they postponed the season. So 5 hours later, we got back on a plane to Moscow and landed, and I texted my agent, and I'm like, I'm getting out. It's just, it's not worth trying to wait this all out, because Russia's about 2 weeks behind us, and if it's already happening in the USA, it's only a matter of time before Russia shuts down as well. And my thinking was, I'd rather be somewhere where I'm comfortable. I know the language. I know people are going to like take good care of me. So the next morning it was like a 9:30 a.m. flight, and I was on a flight to JFK. And then after that, JFK to Chicago. So it was crazy. It was very stressful leading up to leaving. And then the actual travel experience and everything with that was as smooth as it could have gone. So very lucky for that.
So what does the season look like in Russia? Like, how much travel are you doing? When are the matches? Like, because, you know, we've talked about there's no professional volleyball circuit really in the United States. So what does it look like when you're playing in Russia?
Yeah. So, in Russia, it's a pretty typical, we practice 2 times a day. In the morning, it's usually some type of serve pass or lighter practice with weights. We'll have a little break in the middle of the day, and then at night we do our 6-on-6 team practice. So that is typically what that consists of in terms of practice. And then it's a little different with where my team is and where we travel. We train about 1 hour and 15, 1 hour and 30, depending on traffic, from our actual competition gym. So we stay in a hotel, you know, whether it is a home game or an away game. So we were in hotels a lot. We were traveling a lot.
Are you in a hotel all year long, or do you have an apartment also?
Yeah, so I have an apartment, and I'm there. I sleep there most nights, and then it's actually strange. So when we do training, we only train about 5 minutes from our apartment, but they make us stay in a hotel during the day when we have double days. So it's like total lockdown. Are we really surprised type of deal? But yeah, it's strange. I mean, we get fed twice a day, which is great, but we also really are not in our apartments that often. So yes, I have an apartment, but I'm in hotels most of the time.
So where's your team based out of? Like, where are you staying in Russia?
Yeah, so I'm actually in Moscow, and there's like 3 rings, and where we train and play is on the outermost ring. So I would say it's like, if you're looking at Moscow, we are on the east side of Moscow.
As somebody who has never been to Russia, and I probably will not get there in my lifetime, I don't have reason to at this point. What is Russia like?
You know, I actually really didn't mind Russia. I was shocked. It was way more modern than I thought it was going to be. It's a lot bigger, pretty grandiose, I would say. And I know a lot of people say the Russians are really mean and how they kind of come off, but I never had that experience, honestly. Whenever I needed help, like, they were more than willing to help me out, point me in the right direction. And it never really came off as rude or anything like that. So that was one thing I was really surprised by, how modern the city was, and it was pretty clean. I really liked that. However, the weather is pretty miserable. Like, it's like 2 or 3 months straight of just cloudy, deep fog, just super depressing. I had to go out and buy it was one of these like sun lamps that you turn on in the morning, and it like shoots out 10,000 watts of some whatever UV voltage. And that helped me get through the season, because it gets pretty dark there for a while. So overall, I thought it was a great experience. And honestly, the biggest thing was the public transportation. I used the metro all the time to get into the center. And within 40 minutes, I was down in the Kremlin area in the Red Square. So pretty cool.
I have no doubt that Hollywood plays a role in why we think Russians are mean. There's obviously history. There's history between the countries, no doubt. But how do they respond to American culture, American movies, music, like, because they have been painted as the villain a lot.
For sure. I would say, so they really don't listen to that much American music. I will say that they're super into their like dance, techno, electronic stuff, like whatever floats your boat, but doesn't float mine. And yeah, so I would say they like American movies. They enjoy the acting and the level of acting that comes with Hollywood and American movies, not so much with the music. And then in terms of culture, we have different cultures. I'll say that. It's just how we approach things and how we really take a lot of pride in like teamwork and working together and things like that. Of course, they have a lot of pride for their country, but it's a little bit more individualistic and I don't know, I guess maybe a little bit more of a selfish society than what I have experienced, at least with Team USA and living in the United States.
Have you learned the language at all?
Absolutely not. I learned like the rotations, like basically like 1 through 6, like the numbers 1 through 6. Hello, goodbye. Okay, один, два, три. What's 4? Шесть. I don't know 5. That was the one. I'm like, okay, I know when I hear it, that's 5 because I don't know that one. And Chitty is 6. Привет is like the cool way to say hey or hello, good morning. Бака is bye-bye, bye. What else? That was literally about the extent of it. Вода, water, super hard, I know.
What's the makeup? What's the makeup of your team?
Absolute minimum basics.
What's the makeup of your team, Americans or Russian national to foreigners?
Yeah, so there was 4 Russian national team girls on my team. And the way the Russian league works is there's only 2 foreigners allowed. So it was me as an American, and then the other foreigner was a Czech Republic girl. And she's been on the overseas scene for a long time. So she can pretty much speak every language. And it was crazy because last year she was also on this Moscow team and didn't speak any Russian, had such a hard time. And then this year she came back and she, I don't know how she knew it, but she can fluently speak Russian now. So her and I would say my roommate, who's a Russian national team girl, them two were like my main interpreters, translators, always helped me out because I would say this year was interesting because I never knew what was going on. And I just kind of went with the flow. Like if someone tells me to be somewhere, I'm there, which for me is really hard because I'm a control freak and a planner and I have to have everything under control. So I had to flip the switch this year and just kind of learn to go with the flow and not get worried about things that I don't know about, right? Like you don't know what you don't know. So I just kind of had to lay back and relax and it was kind of nice. It was a different change of pace. So.
Right. This is where I'll put in my plug. And Patrick, you talked about Hollywood shaping a lot of our interpretations and attitudes. If you haven't seen the show, The Americans, it's probably it's among my favorite shows of all time. Awesome. It's all about the Cold War in the 80s and KGB agents posing as Americans in the US. Awesome show. So add that to your quarantine watch list. But
exactly.
If you were the only American on your team, did you have any contact with other Americans when you were over there? Did you meet anybody or connect with, I don't know, were there some Badgers over there you could meet up with, some UW alums or anything?
So this year was really bizarre. I'm not sure how it worked out, but it was the most social interaction that I had over my professional years. So 2 years I was in Italy and I hung out with people, but not as often as I did with people in Russia. And I think it was because of the situation we were all in. And we knew that we were in a culture and society that we're just not super comfortable with. And so it was great because there was there's a lot of people in Moscow. So there's also a men's Moscow team for volleyball. And they both had 2 foreigners, and it was a Belgian guy and a Canadian. And the Canadian had his wife there. And then Eric Soji, who's on the men's USA national team, he's the libero. He lived in Moscow as well and played for, he had a different situation. There's some teams that are super far away in the boonies of Russia. And so they live in Moscow and train in Moscow. And then they travel to their home matches, which are like a 4-hour flight away. So that was his situation. So he was in Moscow the majority of the time, but then would fly to his home matches. It's called Novy Urengoy. It's literally almost in the North Pole. So there was a group of about, and then his teammate actually was Hungarian, spoke perfect English, and his wife was there. So we had a group of like 6, 7, sometimes 8 people that we hung out, and we had family game nights, and we went bowling, and we would go see movies or whatever it was. We hung out a ton, and it was really good. It was just a nice change of pace to be able to hang out and speak English and just kind of relax and digest the whole situation that we were in. So it was great.
What is international volleyball like from a professional league standpoint? So like crowd wise, and I ask that because I don't know why it hasn't caught on in the United States. Like you watch Badger volleyball games and we have thousands of people to pack the field house. It's awesome. People love Team USA and international volleyball. So why is a professional league not caught on here, but it would in Russia?
It's all about the money, right? And it's all about sponsors and who is willing to pay to have the rights to a team. So in Russia, there's a lot of money that comes from, how do I say this nicely? Certain places, right? And it's easy for them to pay people a lot of money. Whereas I'm actually having a call about it today as well, about setting up a professional league in the United States and what that would look like. And in terms of how much money would we have to get paid in order to feel comfortable saying no to these overseas contracts and staying in the United States. There's just a lot of factors that go into it. And so it's frustrating for sure, because like you said, the college game has so much following. Our USA team, we have a lot of following. I think we can have more. And I think some of that can come with the success of winning a gold medal at the Olympics for the first time ever. And so a lot of it just has to do with where the money comes from and who is willing to sponsor and back all of this, because volleyball is a huge sport in the United States. And the leagues would be amazing because all the top players, guess where they have to go? We all have to go overseas in order to play. If we found a way to be able to pay girls accordingly and stay in the United States and create teams in strong developmental areas, it's just, the potential is endless. It's just a finding a way of how do we pay everyone and kind of give us reason to stay here.
I feel like soccer kind of went through that too, where there were startup leagues that kind of came and went over the last few decades. And then the MLS has now obviously it's got a footing now and it keeps expanding and is widely popular. But there was a big era there where if you were good at soccer, you didn't want to stay in the United States because the opportunities weren't here until the MLS had the infrastructure to be paying competitive rates. Like that, it sounds similar. So I don't know who your call is with later today, but picking the brains of the people that built the MLS would be advantageous.
Absolutely. And it's kind of funny you bring that up, kind of on the same kilter, but was watching the 99 series yesterday on ESPN Plus, and just with those women and what they had to go through in order to bring the same clout that they had as the men's team. I don't know how to say this correctly, but they had a lot of struggles and trying to gain popularity for the sport of soccer. And then they go in 99 and they win the World Cup. And since then, sure, it's not always been a straight way to success, but they found their way back and found a way to fight for equal pay and equal rights and things like that. So I think at some point we're going to have that same battle in terms of professional leagues foreign versus professional league here in the United States. Are we there yet? I don't think so, but I hope that it happens sooner rather than later, because it's just a different experience. It's great living overseas and getting those experiences and learning about different languages and cultures. But at the same time, there's nothing like being able to stay at home or stay in the United States, stay somewhere where you're comfortable, and be able to do something you love every day.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if you can make the money work, the interest is there. I mean, it's a sport that, like we've talked about in the last few minutes here, has a great following in this country. But what was the fan level of interest that you're playing in front of in Russia? Like, what are there full gyms? Is there a ton of excitement? Like, where does this sport kind of fit on the radar in Russia and Europe where you've played?
Yeah. So Russia, I would say it really depended on the team. It was interesting. Like with our team, the men's matches were always sold out. It was incredible. And then the women's matches, we didn't really have that many, even though historically we've been the best team in Russia and one of the best teams in the world. So I just thought that was an interesting contrast between at least the men's and women's teams. Of course, I think people like to watch men's volleyball a little bit more because it's powerful and it's strong and it's impressive how high they can get over the net, right? But there's not that many rallies. I don't know. For me, I like watching women's volleyball better. There's more rallies and defense, which I love. So that's exciting to me. But for maybe the casual fan, them seeing men just go up and bounce 10-foot balls, maybe that's what they like. So I think it depended on where we were in Russia and the team's support. If it was a really small town, of course, the gyms are packed because that was what they did. They go and watch volleyball. Italy, I would say, would have a stronger following top to bottom. Didn't matter where the team was or how good or bad they were. They were selling out 4,000, 5,000 seat gyms. So again, still not as strong as I think the university level in the United States, but still good nonetheless.
That's along the lines of what Ethan was telling us last week about playing basketball in Italy and the level of interest. And like, there's just this huge passionate following for it there. So that's cool that you've been able to experience that. Do you know what your next professional stop is? Assume, you know, whenever we get back to quote unquote normal.
Yeah. So I don't think I've even said it yet, but I have signed with a team in Turkey, Turkish Airlines, and they are based out of Istanbul. And I was so excited to get this contract because I've been wanting to go to Turkey. And since I started playing, well, I guess knowing professional volleyball, I've always wanted to play in Turkey. And I had such a good experience when I came to Turkey. I was in high school, and just experiencing the culture and the food. And I was like, this is a really cool place. And so we ended up going back to Istanbul last year for one of our Champions League matches. And I'm like, I want to be here so bad. Like, this is just an awesome place to be. So the contract came through earlier this year and I was like, sign me up, I'm in. So I'm lucky that I have a job next year. I don't know if it's going to be the case with most of the girls in Italy. Who knows if they're even going to have a league. Same thing with China. It's kind of up in the air. So yes, next season I will be in Istanbul playing for Turkish Airlines.
Congrats. We're breaking news here on the podcast. Have you connected with Sam Decker at all? Because I know he's been playing in Russia too. And I don't, maybe even just like a email or face or texting with him. But have you connected with him about your experience?
Yeah. So we were trying to actually find a time to meet up just to chit chat about everything. He's a little farther south in Russia than I am. And so it ended up working. There was no time where he was at home or traveling to Moscow. We were always in opposite places. So we were never actually able to meet up, but talked a little bit, not a ton, just about the experience of it. And most of it was actually about the escape plan that we both had to do. And the men's basketball actually stopped way prior to the women's volleyball leagues stopping in Russia. So they were in quarantine for a while prior to us leaving. And then he ended up leaving actually after me. It was right as Russia was closing borders and they were like, get home now or you're stuck basically forever. And he's like, okay, I think it's time for me to go. Yeah. So he packed up his bags and he was out, I think, within a couple hours. So I know we talked at some point middle of the season and we were kind of on the same kilter. Like, we're doing fine. We could be doing better. And it's just a matter of riding the waves of the season. And of course, when you're doing good and the team is doing good, everyone's happy and treating you great and practices are fun. And then you're going through the kind of rough part of the season. You're not doing quite as well as you'd like, or the team isn't winning and everything just gets a little bit more, it's harder to go to practice every day and things like that. So we were talking through that and just kind of giving each other like, hey, you got this, stay with it. Like, it's not going to last forever. Just giving each other a little pump up just to kind of stay with the rest of the season.
Transitioning a little bit, we're all affected by COVID-19 right now. And there's a lot of, obviously, a lot of things being shut down and canceled. Mm-hmm. And And I feel sad and feel bad for a lot of athletes and entertainers who are having their lives changed and canceling opportunities. I feel bad as a sports consumer that I don't have things to watch, you know, but that's kind of selfish. But for you, obviously, it's had a really direct impact with the postponement of the 2020 Olympics. Mm-hmm. How did you find out that that the Olympics were going to be postponed?
Yeah, so I actually found out through a reporter, a local reporter texted me and was like, hey, sorry to hear about the 2020 Olympics. Like, we're rooting for you. Like, would love to get a quote from you. Like, what is this guy talking about? Like, I haven't heard anything from anywhere, like nothing on like Twitter or Instagram, nothing from our staff. So he misinformed. And then it came through like an hour later and got the social media reports that, okay, yes, he said the Olympics are postponed. And so, yeah, I just lost it. I cried. And I was, when you just put your whole heart and everything you're working towards is this one goal and it gets taken away from you, it's, I mean, it's devastating and it's soul crushing. And you're like, why is this happening? Like, I've put everything I had into this and now they're just taking it away from us. And of course, retrospect, it's the right decision. It's the safest decision for everyone and it makes sense. And yeah, so I lost it for like an hour. And then after that, Kelly Sheffield called me and he was like, I'm bummed for you. And I was like, I'm bummed for me too, Kelly. And he's like, but you know what? There's only positives that can come with it. And so he started giving me perspective. Hey, you know what, kiddo? It's only postponed a year. It's not postponed 2 years. They're not canceling it. It gives you another year of professional experience and it maybe weeds out some of the older players on other teams. As a team, as Team USA, we are pretty young. And so we have an advantage in that aspect to gain another year of experience. Whereas a lot of these girls on other Olympic teams, they've been here for a long time and 1 year can really make a difference for their bodies. So he really just started giving me good perspective and how to kind of approach these next couple weeks in terms of being a leader within the USA team and just kind of rallying the troops and saying, hey guys, like, yes, this kind of sucks right now. However, there's going to be some delayed gratification with this and it's only going to make us work in our favor. So kind of, I don't know, just kind of take it as it is right now and use this to work through the summer. And we're all in this together. It's a super weird situation, but we're going to work our way through this and it's only going to be better. And it's, you know, it's only going to help. So really glad for him. And I love having him in my corner. I know he's always got my back.
It's really interesting to hear, and as a Badger fan, I love to hear that about Kelly Sheffield and the impact that he has on alums. I think our listeners may not know that Lauren is you. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're on pace to essentially be the starting center for the national team in this year's Olympics. And tell me if I'm wrong, but you're kind of about to become the face of USA Olympic volleyball. Is that unfair to say that that's the position you've kind of risen to? I know you're humble, but indulge.
I know, it's like makes my skin crawl. you know, you can never, nothing is ever given, right? And we always say nothing is guaranteed in the USA gym. It's everything can change at the flip of a coin. And so I think what was most devastating about going into this summer was knowing that I did put myself in a really good position mentally, physically, in terms of the possible 12. I feel like I put myself in a good position to be one of those 12. So I think that was one of the more devastating parts of it. However, the way Kelly put it is like, are you going to get worse over the next year, Lauren? I would say probably not. Like, it's only, your situation's only going to get better and you're only going to get better as a player. So, yeah, I mean, possibly, I don't like looking at it that way, but yeah.
Yeah, you are. You are. Let's, yeah, you are.
Okay. So as the face of Team USA, we've now established that as the face of Team USA, what, What's been the highlight for you of international competition with the U.S. team at this point, knowing that the Olympics are going to be pushed back? What's the positive you've taken from your experience on the national team so far?
You know, I just think I go back to us getting another year of experience. And I do think it's good because first 2 years of the quad, it was, I didn't have a great showing. I didn't come on as strong as I wanted to onto the national team, onto the scene. It took me a while to kind of get used to the system and get used to how this offense was run. And then going into, it was the 2018-2019 season for professional volleyball. I went and played for Novara in Italy and ended up winning a Champions League with them and having, his name is Massimo Barbolini, I think one of the best coaches in the world. He just gave me so much confidence and so much, I don't know, he really supported me and was an amazing coach. And I think it kind of just built my confidence as the season went on. So coming out of that, I felt really good stepping into the U.S. agent, even though the past 2 years I didn't have a lot of success. Coming into that, and I went on VNL, and then we ended up, it was like two matches in, and then I all of a sudden became the starting setter in VNL for the USA team. And so this is past summer. And it kind of just grew from there. So I think just having a really successful Volley Nations League with the team and being the starting setter there and winning gold, and then going into the Olympic qualifiers and having those three matches in Louisiana and qualifying for the Olympics, I think those were the two really good showings that we had as a team. And so I think giving us one more season, even this year, of just training and working together and working out some of the kinks and kind of fine tuning some of the things we need to fix, I think that will help us going into 2021 and just give us another leg up, a little something extra that maybe we wouldn't have had this summer.
I read somewhere that when you were 9 years old, you drew a picture of yourself in a USA jersey wearing number 7, and now you do wear number 7 for you. Is that true?
Like, that
doesn't
true.
Seem, that doesn't seem like real. Like, that's like in a movie.
Right. Like, oh no, Lauren, you drew this 2 days ago, and like, you know, no.
I'm pretty sure I drew pictures of myself as a pro athlete too, and it never happened.
I don't know if that's a way of like writing down your goals and things, but it's pretty crazy just how, if you can believe it and you can dream it, you can do it, right? And yeah, I don't know how old I was. I was pretty young, and I'm a terrible draw, so I don't know why I would have drew this in the first place, but I was just doodling one day and I drew myself in a USA number 7 jersey, and now here I am wearing number 7 for Team USA and hopefully becoming an Olympian within 15 months or so here. So it's just,
does that drawing still exist?
It does. It's hung up in my dad's office. I don't know if I have one on me at the moment. But yeah, it still exists. He's still got it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So you mentioned earlier that everything's earned, but as now that we've established you're the face of the Team USA, did you hear it before? Just got to make sure people know. Did you have to do any lobbying to get Dana Redke as a teammate, or has she, you know, or has she just totally established herself enough to kind of get in that fold as well?
No, I mean, she's earned the right to be able to train with the USA team and get a chance and get an opportunity to play with us during the summers and maybe even possibly get a spot on the Olympic team. And it's just that all is due to her hard work and her passion for the game and her ability to just do things that people at her age and her height cannot do. And so that all comes from hard work and the time that she's put in over the years. And she started so much later than me, and I'm like so jealous that she is where she is. And she's like, I think she started when she was 15 or 16. And it's just incredible how fast she's become so successful at volleyball. So I'm pumped for her and I'm super excited. Just to be able to train with her and play with her. And yeah, we'll see what happens after this season with Wisconsin. So I'm excited to watch her develop. And I didn't have to do any lobbying. She did that all by herself.
Let's say you're going to have a line of like Molly Haggerty's like knocking on the door, like all these other like Badgers would be like, hey, wait, I lobby for me too. How closely have you been following the Badgers? Like, were you from Russia? Were you able to watch this last season at all, and how incredible they were?
It was tough to watch with the games being at like 3 or 4 in the morning. But I would always look at the stuff the day after and just see how they were going. And it was, you got the feeling that as the season was going on, of course they had a tough start, but preseason really doesn't mean much in the grand scheme of things. And so I don't know, never really lost doubt because we've also been in that position. So it was kind of like, all right, let's get some traction under us and let's get some momentum rolling. And I feel like as a fan, you could tell that they were starting to pick up as the season went on. It was kind of like a freight train that was coming for them, for whoever was playing them next. And so it was fun to watch and just so proud of, as an alum, just to watch them play and how they compete and work together. And I think also props has to go out to the social media team and people who put out everything on UW volleyball. It's so easy to get access to what's going on in the court and behind the scenes and them interacting with each other and with the staff. It's been really fun to watch and see that develop as the years have gone on. But then ended up watching, of course, I didn't get to watch the finals match online. I actually went back and watched it though. And of course it's never how you want to end, but I don't think they're going to get theirs. And whether it's this year or coming years after this, it's only a matter of time because you're getting the feeling that we're just right there. There's just that little bit, that something extra that we need. And so I hope they can figure it out because this group of seniors coming up is just, they're incredible and they've been super fun to follow.
You feel some ownership and some pride in, you know, starting to lay the groundwork for the run that this program has been on the last 6-7 years?
I think that 2013 team did a really good job of just kind of setting the standard of how we go about things and how UW volleyball, how we play, and just that mindset that we go about our daily activities with. So I think as a team, we did a really good job of that. But I think every team takes on its own personality. And I didn't really interact with many of these girls that are on the team now. I played with Molly and I was able to train with Hilly for a little bit when she came in my senior spring. But this team is what they make of it and what they made of it as their 4 years have gone on. And I know being a part of that program that the seniors are the ones who kind of run the show and what are you going to leave this program and how are you going to leave it in a better position than what you found it. So every year, of course, you have a new group of seniors and a new twist that they're putting on things. And it's been incredible to watch. And I know that soon I hope we get our national championship. It's time. It's time, people. We need it.
So you guys, just like this year's group, made it to the national final in 2013. Yeah. But was that the best team you played on? What was the best team you played on during your 4 years? Because there's some good ones. I mean, they're all good
and they're all good for different reasons, which is tough. I really loved my sophomore year, the 2014 team. That was the team we ended up winning a Big Ten championship with. And I think we were so strong because we had only lost one player. We only lost Amory. And we just had a lot of momentum coming out of 2013 and a lot of swag and just kind of how we went about things. We were just, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but we were just badasses, right? And we just went about things and with a lot of swagger, and I loved that. And so I think how we approached that season, I really loved that. And of course, just a really unfortunate ending for us, as was most seasons. You know, if you don't win, you feel like a failure, even though that's not the case. We still ended up winning a Big Ten championship. I just loved the personalities and how we approached that 2014 season.
Was that the year you got hurt at the regional?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah. My ankle's twitching just thinking about it.
Lauren, you brought up, you kind of shed light on your relationship with Kelly Sheffield and the fact that he called you and kind of helped give perspective. We had him on our podcast back in the fall during the volleyball season, and it was one of my favorite conversations we've had. Like, and I knew Kelly a little bit from seeing him and, mm-hmm. you know, in the hallways and stuff, but I had not had a conversation like that with him. And it was, he was so genuine and funny and quirky, but I really enjoyed the conversation. What from your vantage point, both playing for him and then maybe now watching mm-hmm. from afar, why do you think he's been so successful? What makes him such a good coach?
I think the biggest thing, oh my gosh, got chills. That was weird. I think the biggest thing that makes Kelly Sheffield so great and such a good coach is that it's not just about volleyball with him. It's about him reaching out and caring about each one of his players as a person and what's going on in their personal life and how can he be of service to you. And I found that through my career at Wisconsin and now. And there were times he didn't even want to talk about volleyball. He's like, how's your dad doing? What's your sister doing? You know, like, what do you want to do like after volleyball? And we would have these conversations and wouldn't bring up volleyball once. Right. And it was just refreshing because so many times, I mean, especially as a professional now, it's all about volleyball. It's never about your personal life and what's going on behind the scenes. And so to get just a different perspective and someone asking about how you are doing and what do you feel like you need and just kind of lay it on me type of deal, it's refreshing and it's so nice to have someone like that in your corner. And I wish that everyone could have that same relationship with their coach or someone in their life, because it's nice to just take a step back and just not feel like everything is on your shoulders and the burden's on your shoulders. You can kind of push it off on other people and get a different perspective. And I think one thing me and Kelly actually always talk about is I get so caught up in certain decisions and things that are being done. And I think of it as a player. I don't know the coaching side of it and why decisions are being made or why we're doing what we're doing at certain times. And so for him to step in and say, okay, I understand where you're coming from as a player. However, as a coach, this may be why they are doing what they are doing. This may be why this decision is being made. And so I think between him caring about you as a person and what's going on behind the scenes in your personal life, as well as just offering a different perspective that you may not have thought of as a player, it's really nice. And I know that he's always got my back and I've got his back. And yeah, I love that man. He's awesome.
Lauren, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. This has been a really great conversation. And I mean, you mentioned that this program, you feel like, you know, its time is coming in terms of a championship. And we know even if you have to wait a year, your time's coming, the Olympics are coming. So
thank you.
Keep carrying the banner for the Badgers and for Team USA. And we'll be watching for you in Tokyo whenever you do get that chance.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good luck with your last few days of quarantine.
Woohoo. Almost there. Home stretch, people. Let's do it.
See ya.
Thanks, Lauren.
See ya. Go Badgers.
Awesome to have Lauren as a guest and taking some time to talk to us from quarantine. She is someone that I've always said, if I was starting a team from scratch, regardless of sport, she is somebody that I would want on my team. It's her toughness, her competitiveness, her intelligence. Like she's an athlete who has always impressed me in a lot of ways. And one thing I forgot to ask, I wanted to ask her if she, was it always volleyball for her or was she competitive in other sports? I don't know, something for a follow-up the next time we talk to her.
I'm guessing that she's competitive in everything she does. Just based on how successful she is, she's probably the type that if she's playing cribbage, it's like cutthroat cribbage. That would be my guess. Shouts to Bianca Michelli because she's been the one who Lauren gave a shout out to about the social media for Badger Volleyball, and they have done an awesome job. She's been coordinating those efforts. A lot of people are involved. But giving Bianca a little love for what she's done on it. Also want to give a shout out to one of our loyal listeners, Brendan Wood Taylor. He sent us a nice email the other day and he asked a question that I actually had to do some digging on. I don't know why he was wondering, but he was wondering who the longest tenured employee at UW Athletics is, and what they do. And I, which was an interesting question, and I didn't know off the top of my head.
Did you get the answer?
No, I'm not positive in this. No, I
have a guess.
I probably should have gone to HR to actually find out, but okay, give me your guess first.
It's got to be Alan Zussman, right?
That was what the consensus was from the people that I asked, and I thought he's now in his 43rd year working with Badger athletes in the academic services. Not far behind him, Mary Weaver Cleese is in her 37th year. She's also in academic services. I think Barry Fox, who's our director of facilities, and Jim Roberts, who's in our information technology, I think those two might be close behind as well, too. They've been helping and working with Badger Athletics for a long time, too.
Shout out to Mary Weaver Cleese, by the way. One of the best people you'll ever encounter, meet, have the chance to work with. She is just an awesome person. And you've heard hockey players, basketball players, everybody that she's had a chance to work with over the years just extol her virtues as a academic advisor, but just as a person, she's great. And I know she's retiring here at the end of the year, and she's somebody that we will miss in the department for sure.
Yeah, one storyline that got a lot of attention in the men's basketball season this year was Rashard Griffith coming back to UW and finishing out his degree 20 years after starting it. Mary Weaver Cleese is the one that he has been working with. She's been the one that has been keeping him on the straight path to getting it, and he has credited her with a lot of his development and making sure that he gets his degree, which is an awesome story, but she is a big piece of that too. So
some big shoes to fill for sure.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for checking out our podcast. Appreciate you listening. If you can give us a review, maybe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, it helps us get in front of more and more Badger fans. And hopefully we can just bring a little bit of a distraction in this time. Drop us a message if you want to hear us talk about anything. If you've got questions for us, you can find us at Behind Badgers on Twitter. You can email us to the email address is behindthebadgers@gmail.com. Other than that, please continue the social distancing right now. We are flattening the curve, even as if it's a slow process, it's happening. And all of us are doing our part. This is one thing that has unified the entire world, which is neat. And we appreciate all of you who are doing your part.
Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.